10-minute speaker is Derek P. from San Diego.
My name's Derek, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Joe for asking me to do this. It's always an honor and a pleasure to get to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there was a time about 5 years ago that I wasn't getting asked to go anywhere. I was getting asked to leave most of the time, and, you know, so that's that. And I'd like to welcome the newcomers. Welcome to a new way of life. But, you know, there's an important line in our book that I really like, and it says, you know, if we honestly want to and are willing to make the effort in regards to staying sober. And there was a long time where I'd come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not put any effort into it. Was not willing at all. People would tell me to get a sponsor, take the steps, find a relationship with God. And, you know, I'd tell them, no, that's not for me. I'm cool. I'll just come to meetings. And, you know, sure enough, I'd come stumbling back into the rooms about 6 months later, 3 months later, 2 weeks later, and say, hey, what do I do? And they're like, find a sponsor, take the steps, and find God. And, you know, no, I'm okay with that. Like, I can do it my way. And I did that for the better part of 5 to 6 years. And so, you know, growing up, I grew up here in San Diego, nice, real nice home, two loving parents. Grew up in a home without alcohol. Both my parents are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, but I'm kind of like that little kid. Like, I like to tell a little analogy. Like, on Christmas, I open up my presents, and I'm super stoked with my presents. And about 7 minutes later, I'm no longer happy with those presents. And I'm especially not happy with those presents when I go outside and start seeing what Johnny's got. I want Johnny's presents, and because I don't have Johnny's presents, my parents don't love me. And I'm not going to amount to anything, and I'm just not good enough. And all kinds of delusional, twisted thinking occurs, and this is like at the age of 5 years old, like thinking this way. And, you know, when I'm 13 years old, I'm hanging out with some buddies on the baseball team, and one of them has the bright idea to go steal a bottle of booze, and I didn't really want to. My parents, like, were very sure to tell me about the dangers of alcohol, and, you know, so I was scared, but, you know, of course, being a fearful, scared little kid that's always worried about what you think, I jump in, and I go down to the store and steal that bottle with him, go running back to my house, and we proceed to start drinking that booze. And right when I took that first pull off that bottle, all that delusional thinking about what you thought about me, how you were judging me, this and that, if I was cool to you, kind of just like gradually went away as the alcohol hit my stomach. And I passed that bottle to the left of me, and I couldn't wait to get it right back to me. I was worried about you were going to drink my alcohol. And that night, I drank as much as I could. Don't know if I got sick. Don't really remember a whole lot. But the next day, I had a baseball game out in El Cajon, and I'm standing at shortstop. It's the middle of summer, so it's really hot. I'm sweating. I'm not really feeling too good, but I'm not thinking about how bad I feel. I'm thinking about the night before, how that alcohol did something special for me. And I proceeded from that point to basically put as many substances in my body as I possibly could. And alcohol and other substances became my primary purpose in life. And with that came a lot of consequences, you know, broken relationships, crashing cars, getting kicked off athletic teams, missed opportunities to go to college. The list goes on and on. And, you know, but no amount of consequences ever were enough, you know. I always had somebody else to blame. It was always somebody else's fault. You know, it was never the alcohol's fault for why I got arrested for a drunk in public. It was my friend's fault for wanting to leave the bar. And, you know, so I never really took any accountability for any of my actions. And, you know, about 21 years old, I started showing up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, going to sanitariums. And it was basically a five-year period where I was in and out of detox jails and AA meetings, living on the streets and coming into the rooms. And like I said at the beginning of my talk, like, that's the way it was. And I'd go back out and try to do it my way and think that I could outsmart alcoholism or that I wasn't alcoholic. You know, that's really what it was. I thought I could control it. I thought that, you know, if I could just do one, because my intention is never to get, like, completely smashed. Like, I don't want to get hammered and lose a shoe, crash my car, not know where my car is. I don't want that to happen when I start drinking. I just want to take the edge off. You know, I just want to be okay. I just want to be able to function. And, you know, but I was never willing to look at the fact that, like, I couldn't control it. You know, people would tell me, like, can you control your drinking? And, like, I was like, man, like, I just like to party. I just like to have a good time. But I was unwilling to look at the times when I'm 15 years old and I got a drug test for some job and I can't stay straight. You know, and I go fail that drug test, or I get too drunk one night and I don't make it to finals the next morning. You know, or I get so drunk and so loaded that, you know, I don't show up for baseball practice and I get kicked off the team. And, you know, my perception in regards to what alcohol does to me is twisted. And, you know, what ended up happening was, you know, I was in and out of treatment centers and I end up drinking all by myself in a park. And, had nothing left. You know, I'm looking through my phone. Well, I had a phone still, but you know, I'm looking through my phone and I'm trying to find somebody that I can con and like come up one more time. Like, if I can just stay on your couch for a night, you know, $20. Like, $20 will do it. You know, that'll solve my problems. And you know, there's nobody in my phone that I can call. You know, I actually called my family and they're like, "Man, like, leave us alone. Like, we're done." And, you know, I ended up calling a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for the first time in my life, I honestly asked for help. And there was no conditions on what that help was, you know, because I can ask for help. I can ask for help a lot, but it's got to be on my terms. You know, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. You're going to help me, but I'm not going to do what you want me to do. And, you know, he takes me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in that meeting I realize that I'm the only one in that room, or it looks like I was the only one in that room that wanted to put a gun in his mouth and pull the trigger. And, you know, that kind of started out this journey. I ended up going up to a facility way up in the mountains and got introduced to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it's Big Book boot camp, basically, and, you know, I got into that book, and the facilitator up there was made sure of two things, that, you know, I needed to have a relationship with a higher power, and I needed to help others. You know, my favorite line in the Big Book is on page 20, and it says, "Our very lives as ex-prom drinkers depends upon the constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs." And, you know, that's something I try to do on a daily basis today. That doesn't just apply inside these rooms. And, you know, that's at my employer, that's at my home life with my wife, that's with my family and friends, and that's with everybody. That's the guy at 7-Eleven, you know, that needs help. And so I started on this journey, and I got really involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and life got really good. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I haven't had, like, you know, problems. You know, usually my problems are, like, self-meditated problems as a result of Derek. And, you know, there's been times that I've kind of like strayed away, or there's one time really that I've like strayed away from Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I was still going to meetings and like doing fake AA, as I like to call it, and not really taking the steps, not really, you know, I'm still praying, but I'm not taking inventory. I'm not reaching my hand out to the newcomers. And, you know, my life starts falling apart, like, you know, little by little, like, you know, the job's just not quite going well enough. I'm underpaid. I'm undervalued. You know, she's not really respecting me all that much. You know, just feeling underappreciated because I'm Derek. Like, look at how much I do. You know, I deserve so much. And, you know, I go running back to Alcoholics Anonymous with my tail between my legs, and it's time to start doing some work. I did that work, and, like, I'm expecting, like, immediate results. Like, all of a sudden, like, I'm going to feel great, like, and be on beam again and walk in hand with the sunlight of the Spirit. And it wasn't that way. You know, I had to really buckle down and do the work. I'm expecting sponsees to come running up to me like a week later, and it didn't really happen that way. And, you know, but I continued to do the work, and, you know, my life got good again, and I'm back involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, one thing that's been difficult lately, like, my mom, sober 19 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, she started drinking again, and, you know, she's been drinking the last 8 years and had brief little periods of sobriety. And over the last 2 months, right before Christmas, you know, she's a blackout drunk, like falls down drunk. And she falls down a couple times, breaks her legs, hits her head, and gives herself brain aneurysms and is like dying of alcoholism. She doesn't even know it. You know, she's in the hospital 4 days later saying, "Oh, it's okay. Like, I'm going to recover. Like, I just can't wait to get back to work." I'm just looking at her, and I'm like, "Man, like, you have no idea. Like, you are dying." And it's like, man, that puts me back to where I was at 23 years old, walking into the doctor's office, another rehab, and the doctor saying, you're going to die. And I'm like, man, I'm good. Everything's fine. I'm 120 pounds, just got to gain some weight, and I'm good to go. You know? And, you know, that's the delusion of my disease, of my malady, is I don't realize I'm dying. And, you know, if you're new here, like I said at the beginning, you know, willingness, that's really the key. You know, I wanted to stay sober a long time, but I've got to be willing to do the work. If I'm not willing to do anything and show up and do the work, you know, I'm going to get the same old results that I always got. And, yeah, thank you for letting me